From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Polio has been around since prehistory, causing paralysis and even death for generations. In fact, by the middle of the last century, it paralyzed or killed up to 500,000 people every year. In the 1950s, Dr. Jonas Salk invented a vaccine for polio, and as it spread, cases began dropping. In 1988, an initiative was launched to try to wipe out polio altogether, and a worldwide vaccination effort began. Rotary Club International made it their mission to stop polio, and cases of the disease began to drop. However, the disease continues to hang on. Just 2 years ago, Ukraine saw an outbreak of polio that infected several people and paralyzed a child. Now, last year, an unvaccinated young person caught polio and became paralyzed in New York. And just last month, four African countries reported new cases of polio, and these cases are not alone. As World Polio Day approaches, many experts say the effort to vaccinate people against polio can never stop if the disease is to be kept under control. So joining us today is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, to talk more about this disease. Dr. Pate, always nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Gemma.
So Dr. Pate, let's just start with something very simple. How long has polio actually been around?
Well, it's certainly, as you said, it's been a very long time before we even understood what viruses are. The furthest back I can trace it is to about 1300 BC, where there was a description of a priest who had died that had the very classic wasting of the muscles of one leg, as well as the inability to use his foot properly. And so there's a very interesting diagram of it. It's very clearly likely that that person had polio. But then we started getting a lot of more medical research and reports in the mid-1800s. And then, of course, it became a national concern in the 1950s when we were seeing lots of images of people in iron lungs, people needing assistive devices to walk, and people were very, very scared because in the first part of the 1900s, we still weren't quite sure where it was coming from. And then once we figured it out, of course, then there was the wait for a vaccine, as you mentioned. But now we have highly effective vaccines that basically can ensure lifetime protection now.
So let's talk symptoms and what they are, because I have to say, Dr. Pate, I mean, I do not ever remember polio because, you know, I remember my mom having that mark from the vaccine, like on her arm. But polio was not something that when I was growing up, what was a thing. And I think there are a lot of people in that category. So what, again, the symptoms, what are they? What do we know at this point?
So what we can tell, there are three different, what we call serotypes of polio. Let's just say three different strains, if you will. And so they can, some are more serious than others, but in general, about 70% of people that get polio will actually not have symptoms that are recognized at all. About 25% will have symptoms, but it may not be clear that it's polio because it can resemble other viral illnesses and people can get better in a few days and that's it. And the way we know is from seeing these cases when we are having outbreaks and we're looking for it and then we can test and look for it. But about a few percent of people will end up getting a more severe illness with what we call like meningitis type illness. Mm. And then anywhere from, depending on which strain it is, anywhere from about 1 in 200 people infected to 1 in 2,000 people infected will go on to develop that paralysis. And then of those that do develop paralysis, about 2 to 10% of those will end up dying. But you mentioned the case of the young man in New York who got paralyzed. And so based on these odds, we know that it is almost certain that many other hundreds of people were infected. He just was the one that got paralyzed, unfortunately.
So, Dr. Pate, how does polio spread, and you know, how long can someone be contagious?
So there are a couple of ways that it can spread. The most common is what we call fecal-oral, meaning that someone excretes the virus in their feces, their bowel movement, and then either due to inadequate hand washing or not very good sanitary conditions or any number of other ways, somebody else can get very trace amounts of it on their hands, maybe from a surface, and then ingest it. And that is the primary way that you get it, is through the mouth that way. Some people with polio for a short period of time can spread it from their throat by coughing in the area, but by far the vast majority of these cases are acquired by the first route. As to how long they can be infectious, certainly up to a couple of weeks, people can shed that virus in their stools. There are cases where people have actually shed it far longer, but the usual is a couple of weeks.
So what, so if polio doesn't show symptoms in people, as you mentioned, Dr. Pate, then how in the world do we track it? Like, how do we know if, you know, A, if someone has polio, but B, if it's spreading?
Well, a couple ways. One is we can look at and see if we actually are seeing the cases show up. But the other is that we can detect the poliovirus in wastewater, just like we've been doing for COVID. And so when we looked at the wastewater up in New York last year, in fact, that poliovirus was showing up in the wastewater, meaning that there were more than just this one gentleman who were infected. But that's what is particularly concerning about this, because you can be asymptomatic yet shedding that virus in your stool. And of course, with young children who are typically the ones that are getting exposed and infected, in daycare centers, in elementary school, we all know they may not have the best hand washing. And so that's a ripe area for this to spread if children are not vaccinated.
So what about this idea of possibly becoming paralyzed years after you get polio, Dr. Pate? I mean, is this true? Because I've heard post-polio syndrome. Okay, that's very concerning. So talk to us about this.
It is. And this is not the only disease. We also see a very tragic condition with measles, where the child can seem to have recovered just fine from the measles, and then 3 to 7 years later can develop a what is most often a fatal neurologic inflammation from the prior infection. And so with polio, post-polio syndrome, what we did is we tend to see that 15 to 40 years later. So you could be a child, have gotten polio. Maybe you didn't know you did, you know, because maybe you were in that 70% that's asymptomatic, or maybe you just had a what people just mistakenly thought you just had a cold or the flu or something. But then 15 to 40 years old now later, they could end up with new muscle pain, muscle weakness, or God forbid, even in some cases, paralysis. So this is a disease we need to try to prevent, even when people will argue, well, most people are asymptomatic. Well, that's no guarantee. And plus, they're a risk to the rest of the public.
Okay. So we know there's a vaccine and it's very effective. What about treatment, Dr. Pate, once you've had polio?
Unfortunately, we don't have any specific treatments. Back in the older days, before you, I certainly remember seeing the pictures and in talking to my mom, because I was a young child at the time when the vaccine was just coming out. But she would go to the movie theaters and they would show pictures of the iron lungs and so forth and warn parents. So what we do in these cases where they get the paralysis, the question is it severe enough to affect their breathing? And if it is, then we have to support them. Today, we don't use the iron lungs. We have ventilators and other kinds of things that we do, but we don't have any specific treatments.
Okay. So there are two types of polio vaccine, though, correct, Dr. Pate?
That's correct. There's only one kind in the United States. There are two. There's the IPV, which is inactivated poliovirus, meaning that you cannot, quote unquote, catch polio from it. You're not getting the live virus. And that is what's used in the United States. And that is given to children as an injection at 2 months of age, 4 months of age. Then sometime the third shot is between ages 6 months and 18 months. And then the fourth and final shot is given between the ages of 4 and 6 years. So that's the IPV, and that's all we use in the United States. The other form is the oral polio vaccine. And some people as old as me remember we did get the oral vaccine back then because we were using it at that time. And that's the couple drops on the sugar cube. Sometimes people will remember.
Oh, right.
But we don't use that anymore because that is live virus. It's been attenuated, meaning that that virus is not actually going to cause polio in the person that takes the sugar cube. But the reason we don't use it is that virus, even though it will give the person you're giving it to the immunity, in the gut, that virus can be reconverted into the kind that can cause the paralyzing disease, so that if you give a kid today one of these sugar cubes, they can be shedding that virus in their stool and then infected other people that are not vaccinated. So we don't use that here. We only use the IPV. You might ask, well, why do we use the oral, the one I just mentioned, anywhere? And the reason is there are lots of countries where people are spread out very remote, and that there aren't skilled people that can give the injections, and it's just too difficult to do that. So they give the sugar cubes, and particularly when they have outbreaks in those countries. But that's the situation where a person can then travel internationally, come to New York City, and end up infecting somebody here that's not vaccinated.
Okay. And before we go to break, I misspoke when I talked about my mom having that scar. That's the smallpox vaccine, Dr. Pate. You know that. But see,
it is. That's the smallpox. Yep.
Yeah. I just remember that big scar that she had on her arm. So that's another vaccine for another day. But I just want to clarify that I misspoke. Okay. And also joining us in this segment is Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News. So, Dr. Pate, why is it so critically important to get enough children vaccinated against polio?
Well, the reason is that polio is very infectious, and you don't know whether the child that gets infected is going to be one of those that becomes paralyzed, which is just tragic, or whether they are one of these children that will get the post-polio syndrome later. So we need to protect children. And as I said in the earlier segment, we have a very, very effective vaccine. And so it's safe and it will protect them for life. And we need to do that.
So, Kevin, last week you took a deep dive into Idaho's immunization rates, and we talk a lot about rates and percentages. However, you wrote that more than 10,000 Idaho children are not fully vaccinated for diseases that include polio. That is a concerning number.
Yeah, it's a concerning number, and it's very concerning to health and welfare, because what they saw with the vaccination numbers last year was an across-the-board pattern. Fewer kids fully vaccinated, reporting full vaccinations as they go to school, and more students, more kids in school under a vaccination exemption. And those are very easy to obtain. Basically, a parent simply needs to turn in a slip of paper that says, my child is going to school with a vaccination exemption. You don't really have to give a reason. There are medical exemptions, but those are the exception. Most of these are parents just turning in a form, just turning in a piece of paper saying we're not vaccinating our child, or we're not providing vaccination information. So I focused on the measles, not as much on polio, because thank goodness we don't have active polio cases in Idaho, but we do have active measles cases. We have 10 cases that were reported a couple of weeks ago. The numbers for all of these vaccines, and I would imagine it's true for polio and for the measles vaccine, all of these numbers are lower than where health and welfare would want them to be.
So, Kevin, I know, in fact, you reported that the immunization rate for children entering kindergarten fell again last year. So how far did that number fall?
It fell, and it's fallen considerably. So for 2022-2023, the last school year, we won't have this year's numbers for a while, we're talking about an immunization rate for kindergartners of 77.6%. And when you think about, and Dr. Pate is much more studied in this than I'll ever be, when you think about vaccines and you think about what it takes to get to herd immunity on something like the measles vaccine, you're talking about a 95% vaccination rate. We're not even close. Now, I should note that I did ask specifically for numbers about measles, because that is an active issue right now in Idaho. The vaccination rate for kindergartners last year for measles was slightly higher. It was a little bit north of 80%, but that's not exactly anything to write home about, and it doesn't get you anywhere near herd immunity.
Dr. Pate, how much do those numbers concern you even though Kevin focused on measles, these vaccination rates aren't good.
No, and first of all, let me compliment Kevin. I loved your article. I thought it was outstanding.
Thank you.
But he's bringing out the exact point. Measles, and that's the one we would pick because it's the most infectious virus that we deal with. So you're talking about a virus that hangs out in the air. If somebody was infected and in the room and then left the room, but somebody else came in who's susceptible, they could be infected an hour or 2 hours later. It's that infectious. And so when we see measles cases, what we typically see is large outbreaks. We just had one a number of months ago in Ohio and in a daycare, because there were kids that weren't vaccinated. So measles is obviously a huge concern, but also typically people don't just forgo the measles vaccine. When they're not getting measles, they're likely not getting the mumps vaccine. That could cause problems with boys relative to fertility. And then German measles is commonly included in that vaccine. That can cause women to have children, babies born with severe congenital problems or loss of the pregnancy. We've been seeing, even in Australia, for example, we saw a couple of cases of diphtheria. I have never seen a case of diphtheria because it is totally preventable and by the vaccine. So there's that. There's all kinds, and we're seeing more pertussis. So a lot of these vaccine-preventable diseases kids are not going to be protected. And then we have to worry about adults who are immunocompromised, and we have to worry about kids who are immunocompromised. So it's just, it's a really bad situation. And I think because of the low vaccination rates, it wasn't at all surprising that we had a measles outbreak. I think we were just waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, let's talk about the impact of COVID-19 on vaccination rates, because we should note that here in Idaho, our vaccination rates were falling before COVID. I mean, we have not had a great track record when it comes to vaccinating our kids. It got a lot worse, though, correct, after COVID? And how did that impact it?
It's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up, because let's remember that when we're talking about childhood vaccinations in Idaho, we're not even talking about the COVID-19 vaccine. That has never been mm-hmm. part of the state's list of recommended vaccines. Okay, they're not required because, like I said, you could turn in a piece of paper and get around the requirement. So it isn't really a requirement. COVID-19 is not part of the battery of vaccinations we're talking about, but certainly the COVID-19 pandemic has had several impacts on these immunization numbers. First of all, health and welfare says, part of it is just logistics. During the pandemic, families were kind of hunkered down in their homes, mm-hmm. and it was difficult to get into a doctor's office, and it was easy to sort of, maybe let that slide a little bit. So you might have lower vaccine numbers simply because families haven't been able to get into a doctor's office or get into a provider. But part of it, absolutely, health and welfare is very, very upfront about the public sentiment right now about vaccinations, the politicization of vaccinations. Even though that is largely about the COVID-19 vaccine, it's not as much about the polio vaccine or the measles vaccine, which are more time-honored and more, more tested, have been out there for years. Vaccine hesitancy, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, almost certainly has had an effect on vaccination rates for every vaccine.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, I know you mentioned at the start of our conversation how easy it is for parents to exempt their kids out of getting vaccinated. And the Idaho legislature passed this vaccine exemption law back in 2021. So have we seen a difference in vaccination rates since that law was passed as well?
We have definitely seen a difference. And while you can't say that there's a causal link here, it certainly looks like that's a possibility. So this law that you're talking about went into effect in 2021. And what this law basically says is that when a school provides vaccination information to parents, they also have to provide information about the exemption and how the exemption policy works. So again, this went into effect in 2021. In that 2021-2022 school year, the number of children attending school with a vaccine exemption increased by almost 21%. That's a really big one-year increase.
Wow.
And I know we're in the middle of a pandemic, and I know there are a lot of other factors involved. You see an increase like that in the immediate wake of a new state law, which passed overwhelmingly. It passed with bipartisan support. You've got to wonder if that law had some effect on the exemption numbers. Health and welfare says that's certainly a possibility, and the numbers certainly point in that direction.
Dr. Pate, are you concerned that these low immunization rates here in Idaho could possibly lead, I mean, we've already seen measles, but could possibly lead to an outbreak with polio or some other contagious disease?
Well, like Kevin said, I'm not as worried about polio. That is a concern because it's just such a dreadful disease. The biggest risk today for Americans is either traveling to countries where they have circulating poliovirus and not being mm-hmm. vaccinated, or somebody traveling internationally and coming here and exposing someone that's not vaccinated. We do have a lot of international travel among Idahoans, but it's not to the degree that you see with like New York City, LA, those kinds of things, which would be higher risk. But certainly it's a concern. And more importantly, is of even greater concern is all of these other childhood illnesses that we can prevent, that most doctors today have never seen a case of. but we'll now start seeing cases, like I mentioned, diphtheria, rubella, mumps, measles, all of these things. These are big concerns, and they're not going to affect just the unvaccinated child. They're going to, and oftentimes we see clustering of unvaccinated children because parents are of like mind and they may use the same, you know, be in the same area of the state or the same school, the same daycare. And these can really take off, as we have seen in other places, like I mentioned, Ohio.
Okay. Joining us this segment are Janice Fulkerson and Cornelia Sprung from Rotary District 5400, which represents all of Southern Idaho as well as into Eastern Oregon. So Janice and Cornelia, can we talk a little bit about World Polio Day? What is it?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Cornelia. This is a fantastic event that Rotarians are really engaged in. Rotary is a global network of people who are problem solvers, who seek a world where we can really have positive impact. And World Polio Day and what we're doing in our community is a really big part of that. And I'll let Cornelia talk about our goals for the day.
Yeah, so really World Polio Day kind of has two purposes. First of all, we want to highlight our progress in getting towards being polio free. And secondly, there are so many people, boots on the ground, our tireless frontline team of immunizers and volunteers, and it honors their work too. So kind of two purposes for World Polio Day, and it's celebrated every October 24th. And you may not know this, that was actually Jonas Salk's birthday. That's why that date was picked.
So Rotary International started its fight against polio back in 1979, and your organization has helped vaccinate 2.5 billion children. So Janice, what is it about Rotary's mission that lines up with fighting a disease like this?
I'm so glad you asked us that question. You know, one of our mission is to provide service to others, to promote integrity and advance world understanding, goodwill, and peace. And we do that through many of our areas of service. We grow local economies, we support education, we focus on healthcare for mothers and children, and fighting disease is one of our big areas of focus. And we recognized in the late 70s, when smallpox was eradicated, that Rotary and Rotarians across the globe could have a positive impact on healthcare. And we picked polio, and we've been working tirelessly, as Cornelia mentioned, to eradicate polio. And we have been doing that through volunteers who travel to provide immunizations, through funding of vaccines, and through working with global partners to make a difference, because it's really about the healthcare and fighting disease. Polio is one of those diseases that does not have a cure. There's a vaccine, a very safe vaccine, but there isn't a cure. Today, polio it remains in two countries. And if it's not eradicated, within the next 10 years, estimated, polio could paralyze as many as 200,000 children each year. And that could happen in the U.S., It's an important thing related to healthcare and the quality of life for people across the globe.
So, Cornelia, as you mentioned, World Polio Day is next Tuesday, October 24th. Talk to us about some of the recognition that it's getting from around from the state, but also in Boise.
Yeah, so there is a state proclamation. We're pretty proud that Governor Brad Little signed a proclamation declaring it World Polio Day in Idaho. And Mayor McLean has stepped up and done the same thing too. So we're getting some good energy locally. And Rotary District 5400 is pulling out the stops. And we're going to be illuminating some buildings in downtown Boise. The historic Hoff building is going to share a End Polio Now message. And we're doing the same thing in Twin Falls too. There's actually two buildings that we're illuminating there. So we are going to have Rotarians on the streets of downtown Boise sharing information and setting up a photo booth and kind of shining some light on polio, frankly.
Dr. Payne, how important is it to continue to have a World Polio Day? And I ask that because I don't think it's a disease that's necessarily top of mind for most people in the U.S.
No, it's not. And it's very important because it, just as Janice and Cornelia were talking about, we essentially were at the point of eliminating polio, except for two countries, Afghanistan and Pakistan. But due to the nature of those countries, political and strife and battles and wars and so forth, it just wasn't feasible to get everybody vaccinated. But because of the fact that we couldn't control it there, and now that the oral vaccine has to be used in so many countries to put out outbreaks, we see cases not only of the wild type virus, but also cases caused by the vaccine that's being used because they're using the oral form that has the attenuated virus instead of the inactive shot that we use here in the United States. So as long as we have that polio virus circulating, we are going to have risks. We have to remember we're an interconnected world. And so either people that travel to countries, and there's now something like 30 countries that have had polio cases in the last 12 months, and it could pose a risk to traveling with your young infant that hasn't been vaccinated yet, or to unvaccinated people, or people that have been treated or exposed overseas that come here. So it's a big risk, and we need to take these actions. And I'm so proud of Rotary for helping in this initiative.
I have about a minute left. So Janice, what else is Rotary doing when it comes to events all over the world for World Polio Day?
I am so glad you asked that. We have a website that is endpolionow.org, and there's a lot of information there about what we are doing. We are working with our healthcare partners, and Rotarians in just about every club are trying to raise awareness on the need to continue to end polio, to work on vaccinations, to celebrate the work that we've done so far today, and to really encourage people to participate and remind people, as Dr. Pate said, that it is a risk right now. So lots, you know, here in Boise and in Twin Falls, we're lighting up the buildings. There's going to be rallies and street parties and speakers and presentations, and there's going to be a lot of activity across the globe, as well as locally, to focus on awareness of the polio cases that we have, both those that are wild polio and the vaccine derived, so that people can make informed choices.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on the Black experience. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.